Welcome to the Patient Partner Innovation Community Podcast, a podcast created to inform patients, families, and caregivers about important health transformation topics. Since the 2001 Crossing the Quality Chasm Report by the Institute of Medicine, our nation's healthcare system has recognized its need to improve quality of care by way of six important aims that make healthcare safe, efficient, effective, patient-centered, timely, and equitable. But we cannot hope to cross this chasm and achieve these aims until we make fundamental changes to the whole healthcare system. All levels of this work require dramatic improvements from the patient's experience. So this podcast is dedicated to you, the voices most underutilized resource in healthcare, our patients' voices. Welcome, and we hope you enjoy the Patient Partner Innovation Community Podcast.
Hi, I'm Dr. Natasha Washington, president and founder of ATW Health Solutions and sponsor for the Patient Partner Innovation Community. Follow the PPIC community online at atwhealth.com.
Well, hello, everyone, and thank you for joining this week's episode of the Patient Partner Innovation Community Podcast. We say PPIC lovingly for short, and I am very excited to have a very special guest with us. I mean, you may have heard Kevin on a previous podcast, but we just really think we wanted to have Kevin, Mr. Kevin Wake, back with us as we are starting our journey all around patient safety. You all will hear, I would say, for the next upcoming episodes, we're going to ground ourselves in patient safety, elevating those stories, you know, talking about different patient safety collaborative work that all of us are working on. So, you know, just stay tuned. So, but before we get started, you know, I cannot get started without, you know, recognizing our sponsor. So this week's episode is sponsored by ATW Health Solutions. ATW Health Solutions is a Chicago-based healthcare advisory and consulting firm that has gained national recognition for transforming healthcare delivery systems from ordinary and best in class. ATW Health Solutions use a data-driven, evidence-based approach to make healthcare better by focusing on improving quality and safety with government agencies and organizations across the nation. Simply put, we create and implement innovative solutions for the right problems and the right people. So welcome, Mr. Kevin Way. Welcome. I'm excited to start this conversation with you.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Well, I know Kevin pretty well, and he is a dynamite, I would say, patient advocate and partner in this work. But other folks that are tuning in may not know you, Kevin. So how about you take a few moments and introduce yourself? Tell us all about Mr. Kevin Wake.
Sure. My name is Kevin Wake. I am a 56-year-old warrior living with sickle cell disease. I worked for 23 years in pharmaceutical sales and management, and a career I loved. I absolutely loved it, but I had some health complications. I had my second stroke in 2017 that really forced me into an early retirement from my career. And after going through a period of not really knowing what my purpose in life was anymore, I kind of fell into patient advocacy through my provider, who invited me to a board meeting for a local sickle cell organization here in the community. And I went to my first meeting and loved it. I loved the vision. I loved what their mission was. I also was personally touched by meeting another sickle cell warrior that was actually older than I was, living and thriving with sickle cell disease, something that I never had an experience of having before in my life, not really knowing a whole lot of other people living with the disease. That was just very inspirational to me. And so I started volunteering for the Association for Sickle Cell Disease in the community. And that was my first step into patient advocacy, and it has not stopped. It's actually grown. It's going crazy right now. I am also the chairman of our Patient and Family Advisory Council at the hospital where I get my care. And from the work that I've done there, I've been asked to serve on the Missouri State Hospital Association PFAC as well. So I work with other PFACs at the state of Missouri to make sure that that patient voice is elevated as much as they can be. And I've also been involved in multiple committees and different avenues of advocacy. Like I said, it just continues to grow, and I love every moment of it.
Oh, that's awesome. That is so awesome, Kevin. And you know, it's crazy how, and I say this in my own journey in this advocacy walk, is it's amazing how what others may look at as a very painful, and I don't want to discredit, yes, when you're managing a chronic illness or caring for a loved one with a chronic illness, there's some ups and downs, and it is some painful moments, but it's when you take your, I always say, your pain and turn it into purpose, it kind of keeps you going every day. So I appreciate all the work that you do. So grounding us in this theme that I'm really trying to elevate around patient safety, diagnostic journey. And I don't know if you have experiences that you want to share, you feel comfortable sharing as it relates to your diagnostic journey. Did you experience delays? How did that go in terms of you being diagnosed? Do you remember when you were diagnosed, or anything you can share around there? Because what I'm hearing is you either receive a timely diagnosis or you don't, depending upon what that looks like. So could you share a little bit about that with our listeners?
Sure. I was actually diagnosed with sickle cell disease when I was just 9 months old. And it was kind of by accident. My older brother, David, had passed away suddenly and very unexpected at the age of 2.5 years old. And on his autopsy, it was discovered that he had undiagnosed sickle cell disease and passed away from complications. And so I was tested a few days later and I tested positive for sickle cell disease. My parents had no idea that they were carriers of the trait. And they were even told by providers at that time, and this is back in the late 60s, that they had already beat the genetic odds and they wouldn't have any more children with the disease. And so they had my younger brother, John, a couple years later, and he was diagnosed at birth with sickle cell. So all three of my parents' children had sickle cell disease. And so I think that, along with my passion, is another way for me to just kind of honor the memory of both my brothers that have passed away from sickle cell disease, and also my mom, who was a huge advocate for me throughout my journey, to kind of carry on their legacy and hopefully help others with living with sickle cell not experience some of the negative things that I've experienced in my care.
Really? Wow. That, and see, and I know this was quite some time ago, so I'm hopeful that this has changed. So when, and maybe you've experienced some of these stories in the association, sickle cell associations that you work with and other patients, but is there, so when a child is born, there isn't an automatic screening that is done? Is it more symptom-based?
There is a newborn screening that is available now in all 50 states, and that is since the late 80s, that all 50 states now screen every child born in the U.S. for sickle cell disease. So we're very grateful to be on that screening panel. Most patients, when they're diagnosed, they find out immediately after the birth of their child that their child has the disease, and they're asked to seek treatment and follow up with a pediatrician or hematologist. In some states, that communication gets lost, and so a lot of patients are kind of lost to follow up. At that time, most babies born don't look like they have sickle cell. They don't act like they have sickle cell. They act like a normal child. So most parents don't want to seek out, you know, a specialist care. for a baby that doesn't seem sick. And so, you know, early detection is available for all sickle cell disease patients now. It's just that follow-up. And then that care journey really begins after about 6 months of age going forward. And so there's quite a bit of negative experiences that the sickle cell community faces a lot with their care in terms of not having a lot of awareness and education from providers on how to treat and manage the disease. There's also at the point of care, a lot of times in the ER, patients are incorrectly labeled as drug seeking if they're seeking medicine for their pain, if they're in pain.
Really?
And it happens a lot, especially once they transition out of pediatric care into adult care. For patients, you know, I always tell patients, we are disease experts because we know how the disease affects our body. And that's a good thing, but it can also be a negative thing when you go to an ER and know exactly what pain medicine works best for you, especially in the environment that we live in. Oftentimes providers that they're not aware and understanding of what sickle cell is will just think that you're, you know, seeking drugs. I had an experience of delayed care when I was living in one of the cities when I was working. I had my first stroke at the age of 31.
Wow.
And my case was triaged by the emergency responders as well as the ER physicians as a Black male that was experiencing drug overdose or intoxication.
Really?
Never once did they think that I could be having a stroke until I convinced the nurse otherwise. And I could not speak. My stroke affected my speaking capabilities, so I could not communicate that I had sickle cell, that I was having a stroke. I knew I was having a stroke because my brother had just had a stroke 6 months before, kind of the exact same circumstances. So in the back of my mind, I knew what was going on, but I couldn't communicate that. And because you can't see sickle cell, it's an invisible disease, I was immediately labeled as intoxicated or on drugs. And there was nothing, you know, to point them to that conclusion other than being a Black male on a Saturday morning, just having no coordination, and I couldn't speak.
Oh, wow. I'm so sorry that you had to experience that. And I've heard this in other areas as it relates to safety events. And you bring up such a relevant point when I think about, you know, because we've done a lot of work at ATW in the stroke space, and we've heard where patients that are unable to communicate in that instance. So the team has to assess it in a way where they have to leave their biases and check their egos at the door, because I think we're flooded on media, in the community, you know, that there's this there is, and I don't want to discredit, there is a drug epidemic in this country. However, when people come into these systems for care, every case should be looked at with a set of fresh eyes, and not the last 10 cases that maybe that you've experienced. Because at the end of the day, a misdiagnosis or delayed diagnosis, you're going to go on to the next patient and the next patient and the next patient. But that patient may have to live with lifelong disabilities, or their family is planning a funeral, and that's not fair to the family, and it's not fair to the patient as well. So I really do appreciate you elevating that, and I hope that the listeners that are tuning in will take that and say, okay, you know, this isn't just we see these numbers on pages and the data and we think that this doesn't happen, and it does. It happens more often than not. So I do appreciate you sharing that. I can imagine that was a very unpleasant experience. I'll use that language. And so you were really fueled to become an advocate. So patients that are in the sickle cell community, are they reaching out to the association for supports? How is it that you've been able to kind of leverage your advocacy work to really elevate and shine a light on the issues in the sickle cell community? Sure. And other places as well.
Yeah, I, you know, patients are reaching out to the organization, which is great. It's really interesting. The organization, Sickle Cell Midwest, has been in existence since 1981. And I grew up in this area, and I never even knew that this was a resource in the community. Huh. So, you know, I'm really further empowered to make sure that I want that voice out there and I want that resource elevated to patients and all the community. We are working to really expand our reach and our capacity to reach more patients. Because when you do live as a patient with a rare disease, especially, it can be a very lonely journey. You don't always have someone you can talk to about the care and what you're experiencing. And so a lot of times patients kind of fall into some isolation and don't have others to reach out to. And our association is just that. So we can actually provide resources, but also support. And I personally want to be an inspiration to other sickle cell warriors, because so many patients are told that they're going to have a shortened lifespan. I personally was told that I wasn't expected to live past 25. And so for me to be 56 years old, I tease patients that I've exceeded my expiration date by more than twice.
Oh, wow.
But I want patients to realize that a diagnosis of sickle cell is not a death sentence. It's simply just that, a diagnosis, and it does not have to define what you can do. So I want to be able to inspire patients to live their life and manage their disease appropriately and overcome the challenges they have in the community seeking care.
So, and thinking about managing your care, right? So, and I'm just, you know, my daughter has a rare genetic disease syndrome called Jarkle-Levin. And so a lot of times I have to be her walking, talking electronic health record, as you know, we're a busy family. We travel. I don't want to keep her locked away in the box and pretty much glued to my community because of the children's hospital, but to explore. And I know the different checklists and folders and things that I carry along with me. So for patients that are listening, and this is for providers as well, as they're encountering patients who are living with sickle cell, what tips, or I would say tips or tricks, or any advice you would give them as to be able to inspire them to be manage their sickle cell? I would say, I don't want to say better, but have it in a way where they can enjoy their life, like as you have yours.
Sure. I really encourage patients to not be reactive in their care. And when I say that, I mean, don't seek care when you just are in a crisis, when you're having pain. Your physician needs to see you outside of those parameters. And so I encourage patients to always be proactive with their care instead of reactive. And I also think that it's so important for patients, especially when they're in that pediatric stage, to learn skill sets to be better self-advocates, to where they can have those meaningful conversations with providers, and it truly be an interaction that is between two people, the patient and the provider, and not just one-way communication. And so patients, they really need to talk to their provider, ask questions, seek out what options they have in their care. There are some advances that are coming down the pike for sickle cell disease now, which I think is very exciting. But along with that comes a lot of responsibility in terms of really understanding what those advances are what they mean to you as a patient, and getting all your questions answered before making a decision to go forward. And so, and I think this is directly related to patient safety too, is the patient voice has to be represented. And so patients have to be able to ask questions, but also know and how to navigate the avenues for when they have a situation that occurs that is unsatisfactory or could be done better. They've got to realize how they can navigate the healthcare system to, you know, elevate that experience and hopefully make changes for them later and other patients as well.
Yeah, and I love that, as you know, and we were talking a little bit before this, is, you know, we all have had, most of us that have been in this healthcare, I would say, journey, whether you've just gone in for prevention screening or whether you are managing a comorbidity or chronic illness, we've all had maybe an unpleasant experience or negative experience. But knowing that, instead of, and I'll use my family is from the deep south of Louisiana. And the thought process there is the doctor is God, and we don't question what the doctor says. We don't seek another opinion. What the doctor says is law, and that's what it is the culture that from a child I was raised in. And it wasn't until I became an adult that I really, and had my own children and went through this journey with my daughter, that I realized that, wait a minute, I have rights. I can choose who I want to go see. I can ask questions. If I've had a negative experience, I can, you know, share that, but move in a space of a collaborative spirit is what I always try to tell people. Yes, we're angry in the moment, and that's okay. Feel it. But then think about ways that you can, if you've had a negative safety event, a diagnostic error, something happened, how can you leverage that experience and that story to reshape that system, reshape the policy, reshape that process? Because I truly believe in the old saying, you know, you leave it better than how you found it. And if you anywhere that you can partner to really keep sharing that story, be that squeaky wheel, because folks coming behind you seeking care in that system, in that clinic, in that hospital, in that ER, you don't want them to have that same negative experience that you had. And I'll say this and real quick. So our CEO and founder, ATW Health Solutions, the initials ATW, is our CEO and founder's father's initials, Anthony T. Washington. And he died of an avoidable medical error. And she, Dr. Natasha Washington, she really felt that experience very painful for her and her family. But she used that experience to fuel the fire, to light ATW up, to say, hey, I am going to leverage my father's legacy and experience to reshape healthcare for everybody in this doggone country. And I'm not telling you go out and start your own company, but what I am hopefully inspiring you and hearing Kevin share his journey that inspire you into action, even if that is, I'm going to just go to the PFAC at my hospital and listen and share. Or maybe it's my neighbor next door is going to the doctor. Have you had a conversation with your neighbor to say, hey, you're going to the doctor, make sure you bring a notepad. Make sure you have any questions, write it down. Just depends on where you are in your life. But, you know, and I won't say the quote because you shared a wonderful quote that you heard at a meeting. So, you know, I was going to help you. So I would say this, set the stage, tell us about the meeting, and then share that quote that you heard.
Sure. I just returned from Washington, D.C. last week. They had Rare Disease Week, where we got to hear about all the different legislative things that are happening in DC, around the nation, in the rare disease space. And then we had a day set aside that was scheduled for us to meet with all of our congressmen. And given the environment currently, I had no idea what to expect. And, you know, I was pleasantly surprised that the interactions that we had as patients and as advocates with our legislators were very positive for the most part. And there were some legislation that took place last week with a couple of bills that were being reintroduced around sickle cell and also the Accelerating Kids Act. And so I was really happy to see those advances still taking place, even in this environment. And somebody made a quote on the first thing when they were speaking, and I've copied this and said it several times, and that is, in today's environment, it doesn't matter how much is taken away from us. The one thing they can't take away is our story, and our stories have power. And you know, that's something that I continue to kind of revel in, that you know what, now more than ever is the time that I need to be sharing my story and my impact and hopefully improve that journey for other people. So I would just say for all patients out there, tell your story, tell your patient story, because it is powerful and it can elicit change. And it's really responsible for patients to step up and elevate their voice and really share their stories and sit in those PFAC meetings, talk with the, you know, hospitals where you get your care. You know, we are in a different environment now where care is more patient-centered. And I think now more than ever, the patient voice is really valued. And I am so happy to see our PFAC have membership of our PFAC on all the different hospital committees in our hospital institution, not just the PFAC. So we aren't just a committee that is a committee for namesake only. We are actually doing some things and having representation throughout the hospital. And so as a patient, I think the only way that we're going to see our care change is if we have a seat at the chair, at the table. And I'm so happy that PFACs are existing, and our PFAC is definitely giving a seat at the table for all their tables that they have meetings around.
Oh, that is awesome. You know, and that, and I would say this, Kevin, that's refreshing to hear, as I often hear a lot of, oh, our PFAC coming out of COVID, it disbanded. And I'm sure, because I've experienced this in my own state here in Texas. So it is so refreshing to hear that you all are strong and going strong and doing good work. Again, it goes back to that collaborative spirit. We can't just sit in the corners and kick the wall and be, you know, angry about all the different things. You can be angry. It's okay to feel it, but you have to take that fuel and put that into driving change. So I do appreciate that. And I appreciate you saying that, Kevin. Your story has power. I often say that a lot, and I'll post it on social media, and I, you know, put it in different ways. But, you know, it's so nice to hear it out loud from somebody else, a like-minded thinker. I love it. I love it. So, that being said, I know I don't want to keep you long. This podcast is meant to be really just, I would say, short and sweet, to kind of hopefully inspire others into action. Anything we missed, anything you're working on that you want to elevate, any parting thoughts as we kind of come to a close?
You know, I want to, you know, put that power back in the hand of the patients. And I think patients have great power. And it's those alliances that we create as patients with our hospitals, with pharma industry, with our points of care. Once a patient is vocal and visible in those settings, we will start seeing some changes. And it changed. Always takes time. It's not going to happen overnight. Yeah. As a sickle cell patient, I know this for myself, and I tell other patients, You know, when we go to the hospital, we're in the ER, we're in pain, we're in a crisis. We're not going to be pleasant. And
right.
You know, I think it's so important for providers to see us as patients outside of that setting, outside mm-hmm. of a time of crisis, because we are human, we are living our lives. We, you know, that just a blip in a point in time when we're sick, and that's when doctors see us most. And I think they need to see us as human beings. And I really do think that healthcare is changing, but it's so key for healthcare to have compassion put back into healthcare. And the only way that's going to happen is for patients to continue to raise their voice and elevate that.
Absolutely, Kevin. And you're speaking my language. As that is such a point, and I can tell you, my daughter has chronic illness, right? She's trach invented, and but I try my best. They know if I hit the ER doors, I have tried everything in my power to keep us out of the hospital as much as we can. So I may not have slept for 3 days, and I might be in these funky clothes for 2 days, and I'm exhausted, and I'm grumpy, and I'm hungry. She's grumpy and unhappy. So the person that you may encounter, that mom in the ER, is very different from the person that may be in the office or sitting at an advisory meeting or on a safety council. So I do appreciate you saying that. And so patients that are out there, that's why it's so important for us to get involved. Like you said, not just when we're in a healthcare crisis, but when we've had a chance to regroup, digest, really look at what happened in the event. And I've had to do this myself, where we've been, that recently we had a very unpleasant experience in the emergency room, and I was hot as fish grease, Kevin. I'm saying hot. But I came home and I was like, I start typing this email, and I had to stop and say, okay, let me just close my laptop, get some sleep, and come back to it. And when I read it the next morning, I was like, ooh, okay. Let me reword this a little bit better, because I want the team to be able to receive this experience, but build and change the process in a way. If we're screaming and yelling and what, you know, they're going to shut down, you're going to be more frustrated. So I do appreciate you in that whole sense of being proactive versus reactive.
Right.
So if folks want to get in touch with you, Kevin, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, I tell patients all the time also, I know we have so much information coming at us in all angles, but every time we have an interaction in a hospital or a care setting, we always get the surveys afterwards. And it's so easy just to skip over that text message and that email, but those are really some great ways to communicate your experience and some of your frustrations, and they are looked at hospitals. And yes. You know, that's something simple that you don't have to go to the hospital and, you know, go through all the chains of command by filling out that survey. That's okay. Just one way that you can get your voice out there and talk about your experience. So don't ignore those emails when they come.
Yes. And when they survey, it is so important. I know life is busy and people are like, okay, Desiree, you're asking me to do one more thing. But I think it is so important for us to document that, you know, respond to the surveys when you receive the phone calls. I understand life is lifing, but it take a few seconds and respond to that, because they don't know what they don't know. You don't share those experiences, if you don't share your story about what happened or what you would like to see better, they don't know. They're just going to keep on going on and say, okay, everything is great, we haven't heard anything. So right. I do, my challenge to everyone listening, all my patients and community partners, providers, frontline workers, is elevate that story, share that experience. And if you see something, say something. And I know that could be hard to do, but if you see something, say something, because, you know, that's the only way we're going to drive change. So, Kevin, if folks want to reach out to you, we can, I can be the connector if you would like. Folks can reach out and say, hey, I want to get in touch with Kevin. If you're working on, you know, collaborative efforts, patient safety efforts, if you need assistance in your sickle cell community, please, please, please reach out to Mr. Kevin Wake. Is there a website, or I can be the funnel to funnel all the folks to you? It's up to you.
Sure. Well, either way, you can go through Desiree, or you can reach me directly at the association. Our website is www.sicklecellmidwest.org, and our email address is info@sicklecellmidwest.org.
Awesome. Awesome. And we will drop that website and that email in the bio, so people can just click the link and they can connect with you, Kevin. Well, I do appreciate you spending this time with me. It is always a pleasure connecting with you, and I look forward to, you know, having many more conversations in the future.
Great. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Awesome. And as always, guys, be engaged.
Follow the PPIC community online at atwhealth.com.